So, it's October 7th, 2023. And the time is 1912 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Welcome to our study of the scriptures and the article Born and Raised today, and also a brief look at the article chapter 4, that is, of the article Preservation, which is called B. And it talks about the period of time that Joshua ruled Israel in that chapter 4 of this preservation article. As it's called, it's called B, but it's also called Preservation. That's the name of this article by yours truly that was written. When was it written? Well, instead of guessing, I'll just try and look at it and see. Here we go. 2019. It was written and released for the first time in that year. It's called B, but it's also called Preservation. And that's chapter 4 that talks about Joshua. In addition to the article that we're reading now, which also mentioned Joshua, and also we've been reading the book of Joshua, of course. Let me see here. What do we got? Joshua. Let's see. Well, we haven't actually mentioned Joshua up till now in this article, but we've been reading the book of Joshua. We had a reference to the book of Joshua here at the end of chapter 7. Footnote 10. Okay. Let's come back to our present article, chapter 8 of the present article, which is Born and Raised, and it's the story of Jesus and his chronology. The Jewish scriptures are full of things which have an equivalent event in the earthly life of Jesus. And the Greek scriptures, or the Christian scriptures, were written to document such truths. The fulfillment of the earlier Hebrew scriptures have a lot to do with how well Messiah could be identified. In other words, the Messiah would be, by necessity, the fulfiller, the one who fulfilled the Hebrew scriptures, which were the earlier Jewish scriptures, sometimes called the Old Testament. The Messiah would be the one who fulfilled those scriptures, and that's how he would be identified. But this record itself, especially the Gospels, speaking about the Greek Christian scriptures, which were written by the disciples and those who knew about Jesus, permit people of today, especially the Gospels, which are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, to examine for themselves these facts. In the days of Moses, when Israel wandered for 40 years in the wilderness, Jesus was there to lead them in the form of a, quote, pillar of cloud, unquote, in the daytime, and, quote, pillar of fire, by, unquote, by night, until they got to the promised land, pillar by fire by night. Even as Moses approached the end of his life, this same pillar continued with them, serving as a guide through whom Jehovah spoke to them, both to pardon them and to execute, quote, vengeance against their notorious deeds, unquote, and was a spiritual rock mass representing Christ himself. This pillar of cloud in the day and pillar of fire at night, it represented Christ himself. The wilderness wandering ended in BCE 1452. As we have presented previously in our Blessed Genealogy, which is our chronology, and this is a point directly opposite the common era date for King Frederick III, of the Habsburgs, who ruled from 1452 CE. Of the Common Era, on the opposite side of the dividing line between the time before the Common Era and the time of the Common Era. So the same number, 1452, that's 1,452 years before the Common Era, which was when the wilderness wandering ended in our chronology, and 1452 of our Common Era, which is the opposite side of the boundary or the dividing line between the time before and after the Common Era. And therefore, it's the mirror date, in the mirror of the Common Era. Then it's a mirror date, the same number, but the opposite side of the Common Era dividing line between before and after the Common Era. So, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, this date, which is a mirror of the other. In the mirror of the Common Era, then, Jesus becomes a leader who directly corresponds to Frederick III, and this only happens in the genealogy. Genealogy, which is our chronology, allows this corresponding date number to be representing the end of the wilderness wandering, which would be guided by Christ, and the beginning of the rule of Frederick III of the Habsburgs in the same year of the Common Era, who began this period of time following the 7,000 years after Adam. So, in the mirror of the Common Era, then, this occurred, and also that Frederick dies in 1493 CE, which is incredible, because that 1493 is also the mirror date to 1493 BCE, because Jesus, it says here, Frederick dies in 1493 CE, while Jesus as a pillar of cloud began leading Israel in BCE 1493. When Israel left Egypt, they had the pillar of cloud guiding them, starting in BCE 1493, which is the exact number again, on the opposite side of the Common Era dividing line. When in our chronology, that was the time, of course, in the BG chronology, when Moses, in BCE 1493, led Israel out of Egypt in the Exodus. So it's quite a phenomenal correspondence in numbers of the years. The year numbers coincide in a way that is miraculous. And also, it all has to do with somehow the way that Jehovah allowed the Common Era to be determined, with the way it was determined, which was perhaps incorrect, because we would think perhaps that the Common Era would begin when Christ was born, but in our chronology we found that Christ was born in BCE 6, 6 years before the beginning of the Common Era. So the dividing line of the Common Era, when the era began, is placed wrongly. It appears, based on the birth of Christ, his date for his birth, it seems wrong by 6 years or 5 years, because there's no zero year. But even though it seems wrong, we get these incredible numbers that exactly correspond on both sides of that era dividing line, which make it not so wrong. It's phenomenal. It's a miracle from Jehovah. That's only in our chronology, the BG chronology, does that happen. Only in ours. No other chronology has ever achieved that. As far as we're aware, up till now, we're the first. So, and we didn't seek any credit for ourselves. We just sought the credit for Jehovah in all of this. It's all belonging to Jehovah. We want all the glory to be Jehovah's glory. Now, our scripture for today, little ones, is Proverbs 21:8. A man, even a stranger, is crooked in his way, but the pure one is upright in his activity. Interesting. Yeah, some people are crooked, but especially we think strangers appear to be more likely to be suspicious to us. And we think that, well, there's also a translation that says, the way of a man is crooked and strange. There we go. So it's just the fact that men are basically crooked in their nature, we could think, and that's what it means. But then it says, the pure one is upright in his activity. Who is the pure one? Well, sometimes we could think of the pure one as being Jehovah himself, of course. Probably that's the most accurate way of thinking about it, because only Jehovah is pure. Men tend to be crooked, but the pure one is upright in his activity. So it could be Jehovah who's the pure one, because basically we don't think of men as being pure. But Psalm 37 and 37 says, watch the blameless one and keep the upright one in sight, or the pure one, for the future of that man will be peaceful. So men can be pure. Certainly just to a much greater extent than some other men. But generally we think of men as being strange, or especially men who we think are strangers. We don't think of them as being pure necessarily at all. In fact, very often, if they don't know about Jehovah and his righteous ways and his truth, then they're not very upright. They're not very pure in their ways. It's something we have to be aware of, that people are corrupt, right? That's the general possibility for all men. What about Judges chapter 1? Can we read that now? This is our beginning of the study after the death of Joshua. And after the death of Joshua, it came about that the sons of Israel proceeded to inquire of Jehovah, saying, who of us will go up first to the Canaanites to fight against them? To this Jehovah said, Judah will go up. Look, I shall certainly give the land into his hand. Then Judah said to Simeon, his brother, come up with me into my lot, and let us fight against the Canaanites, and I myself in turn will go up with you into your lot. Accordingly, Simeon went with him. With that, Judah went on up, and Jehovah gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hands, so that they defeated them in Bezek, 10,000 men. When they found Adonibezek in Bezek, then they fought against him and defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. When Adonibezek took to flight, then they went chasing after him and got hold of him and cut off the thumbs of his hands and the great toes of his feet. At this, Adonibezek said, there have been 70 kings with the thumbs of their hands and the great toes of their feet cut off, picking up food under my table. Just the way I have done, so God has repaid me. After that, they brought him to Jerusalem and he died there. Furthermore, the sons of Judah carried on war against Jerusalem and got to capture it, and they went striking it with the edge of the sword, and the city they consigned to the fire. And afterward, the sons of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites, inhabiting the mountainous region and the Negeb and the Shephelah. So Judah marched against the Canaanites, who were dwelling in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron before that was Kiriath Arba, as we keep hearing. And they went striking down Sheshai and Haiman and Talmai. And they marched on from there against the inhabitants of Debir. Talmai, it might be Talmai instead of Talmai. Now the name of Debir before that was Kiriath Sefer. Then Caleb said, "Whoever strikes Kiriath Sefer and does capture it, why, I will give him Aksa, my daughter, as a wife." And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, got to capture it. For that, he gave him Aksa, his daughter, as a wife, and it came about that while she was going home, she kept inciting him to ask a field from her father. Then she clapped her hands while upon the ass. At this Caleb said to her, "What do you want?" So she said to him, "Do grant me a blessing, for it is a southern piece of land you have given me, and you must give me Galloth Mayim." Accordingly, Caleb gave her Upper Galloth and Lower Galloth. And the sons of the Kenite, whose son-in-law Moses was, came up out of the city of palm trees with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is to the south of Arad. Then they went and took up dwelling with the people. But Judah marched on with Simeon his brother, and they proceeded to strike the Canaanites inhabiting Zephath and to devote it to destruction. Hence the name of the city was called Hormah, which means destruction, doesn't it? A devoting to destruction. After that, Judah captured Gaza and its territory, and Ashkelon and its territory, and Ekron and its territory. Let's look at a map. Here, if Jehovah's willing, we have possibly a map here. Let's see what we got. There we go. So, first of all, let's look at this other map. We got Ekron, right? Gaza, Ashkelon, Ekron, Gath. What did we just look at here? Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron, right? And Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron, and this other map, Gaza, here. Let's see. Well, here's Hebron, right? We just talked about that. There's Jerusalem, too, on the map, right? We see Jerusalem on the map, too. It's important. We see Gath on the map, too. It's not on the coast. Gaza's on the coast, and Joppa is there, too, on this map. But if we look at this other map, Ekron, you see, is near to Ashdod, and then we have Ashkelon and Gaza to the south. So that's Philistia. That's this little place here, this little area. Lachish is shown to the east of Gaza, and here we have Lachish. So this just doesn't go far enough north to show Joppa. This is a magnification of the other map. There's Jerusalem. There we have it. So it's a useful map. And Jehovah continued with Judah so that he took possession of the mountainous region, but he could not dispossess the inhabitants of the low plain because they had war chariots with iron scythes. When they gave Caleb Hebron, just as Moses had promised, then he drove out from there the three sons of Anak. And the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites inhabiting Jerusalem, but the Jebusites keep on dwelling with the sons of Benjamin in Jerusalem down to this day. Meantime, the house of Joseph itself also went up against Bethel, and Jehovah was with them. See what we saw from Bethel on this map. Was Bethel on them? There's Bethel, right there. North of Jerusalem, east of Joppa, right? And the house of Joseph began to spy on Bethel. And incidentally, the name of the city before that was Luz. And the watchers got to see a man going out of the city, so they said to him, "Show us, please, the way to get into the city, and we shall certainly exercise kindness toward you." Accordingly, the man showed them the way to get into the city, and they went striking the city with the edge of the sword, but the man and all his family they let go. Upon that, the man went to the land of the Hittites and built a city and called its name Luz. That is its name down to this day. And Manasseh did not take possession of Beth Shean and its dependent towns, and Taanach and its dependent towns, and the inhabitants of Dor and its dependent towns, and the inhabitants of Ibleam and its dependent towns, and the inhabitants of Megiddo and its dependent towns. But the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in this land. And it came about that Israel grew strong and proceeded to set the Canaanites to forced labor, and they did not drive them out completely. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites who were dwelling in Gezer, but the Canaanites continued to dwell in among them in Gezer. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron and the inhabitants of Nahalol, but the Canaanites continued to dwell in among them and came to be subject to forced labor. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko and the inhabitants of Sidon and Olab and Oxib and Helba and Aphek and Rehob. And the Asherites continued to dwell in among the Canaanites inhabiting the land because they did not drive them out. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but they continued to dwell in among the Canaanites inhabiting the land. And the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and of Beth Anath became theirs for forced labor. And the Amorites kept pressing the sons of Dan into the mountainous region, for they did not allow them to come down into the low plain. So the Amorites persisted in dwelling in Mount Heres and in Ajalon and Shealbim. But the hand of the house of Joseph got to be so heavy that they were forced into task work. And the territory of the Amorites was from the ascent of Akrabim, from Selah upward. That concludes chapter 1 of Judges. So we see a lot of the inhabitants of the land continued to dwell there. They were not destroyed, but they became subject to forced labor. And they were permitted to dwell with the Israelites in the land, which was not in accord with what Jehovah had spoken earlier, which was that the Israelites were to devote the inhabitants of the land to destruction and not mingle with them. So this was certainly not the most desirable eventuality that happened here. They didn't drive out the inhabitants. They didn't destroy the inhabitants. They allowed them to continue living along with the sons of Israel. So that's what we see in all these different cases that are given in this chapter 1 of Judges. Let's move on, because we don't know how much time we're going to have here eventually. 1 Peter chapter 3. Peter talked about this amazing gift that Christians got in chapter 2. He said, you know, a holy priesthood. Jesus was a living stone rejected by men but chosen with God, and Christians are a living spiritual house. We're living stones being built up a spiritual house for the purpose of a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. And then look what he says here. You were appointed. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for special possession. 1 Peter 2 and 9. That you should declare abroad the excellencies of the one that called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. An amazing, wonderful, beautiful statement of Scripture. In like manner, Peter writes in chapter 3, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, in order that if any are not obedient to the word, they may be won without a word through the conduct of their wives, because of having been eyewitnesses of your chaste conduct together with deep respect. And do not let your adornment be that of the external braiding of the hair and of the putting on of gold ornaments or the wearing of outer garments, but let it be the secret person of the heart in the incorruptible apparel of the quiet and mild spirit, which is of great value in the eyes of God. For so too, formerly, the holy women who were hoping in God used to adorn themselves, subjecting themselves to their own husbands. As Sarah used to obey Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, provided you keep on doing good and not fearing any cause for terror, you husbands continue dwelling in like manner with them according to knowledge, assigning them honor as to a weaker vessel, the feminine one, since you are also heirs with them of the undeserved favor of life, in order for your prayers not to be hindered. Finally, all of you be like-minded, showing fellow feeling, having brotherly affection, tenderly compassionate, humble in mind, not paying back injury for injury, or reviling for reviling, but to the contrary, bestowing a blessing, because you were called to this course, so that you might inherit a blessing. For he that would love life and see good days, let him restrain his tongue from what is bad and his lips from speaking deception. But let him turn away from what is bad and do what is good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of Jehovah are upon the righteous ones, and his ears are toward their supplication. But the face of Jehovah is against those doing bad things. What can we see? Yeah, the face of Jehovah is against us doing bad things. Psalm 34 and 16. Right. Turn away from bad. Safeguard your tongue from against what is bad and your lips against speaking deception is from Psalm 34 and 13. And then turn away from what's bad, do what is good. And the eyes of Jehovah are toward the righteous ones, verse 15. So this is a quote from Psalm 34, 13 through 16, that Peter writes here. He quotes in his letter, 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 through 12. Indeed, who is the man that will harm you if you become zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are happy. However, the object of their fear, do not you fear, neither become agitated, but sanctify the Christ as Lord in your hearts, always ready to make a defense before everyone that demands of you a reason for the hope in you. But doing so together with a mild temper and deep respect, hold a good conscience, so that in the particular in which you are spoken against, they may get ashamed who are speaking slightingly of your good conduct in connection with Christ. For it is better to suffer because you are doing good, if the will of God wishes it, then because you are doing evil. Why, even Christ died once for all time concerning sins, Peter writes, a righteous person for unrighteous ones, that he might lead you to God, he being put to death in the flesh, but being made alive in the Spirit. In this state also he went his way and preached to the spirits in prison, who had once been disobedient when the patience of God was waiting in Noah's days, while the ark was being constructed, in which a few people, that is, eight souls, were carried safely through the water. That which corresponds to this is also now saving you, namely, baptism, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the request made to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He is at God's right hand, for he went his way to heaven, and angels and authorities and powers were made subject to him. And that's the end of 1 Peter chapter 3. But look at that. Christ, not only does Peter agree with the other references about in the Bible, in the Christian scriptures about Christ dying once for all time, such as in the book of Hebrews, for example. He died once for all time. It was a one-time offering. But he also, in this letter of Peter, is described by Peter as having preached to the spirits in prison. Now, we know those are the angels who sinned, and they were put into a place of prison in a spiritual sense. They were imprisoned because they were not allowed to have any power anymore because they had sinned, right? They fell. These were the angels that fell from heaven. And they could only try to influence humans on earth by remote control, so to speak. They could try to influence people, but they were not. They didn't have any lives of their own, right? These are the spirits in prison. And now the interesting part here in verse 20, they'd been disobedient when the patience of God was waiting in Noah's days. We know there were spirits that we know came down and took wives among men. Those are the spirits, right? They had committed this folly by coming down from heaven in order to marry human women, and their sons were the great giants of old who were very violent. That's what Peter's talking about there, right? And so Jesus had gone and preached to these spirits in prison after his resurrection, right? On his way to heaven, he went and preached to these spirits. But the other thing here that's so interesting, that which corresponds to this, meaning the ark, right? The ark, eight souls were carried safely through the water in verse 20. In Noah's days, we know that Noah and his family were saved. All eight people in Noah's family, they were all saved by the ark. Through the deluge, they survived. And that which corresponds to this is also now saving you, namely baptism, Peter writes. And it's the request to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So it's not the putting away of filth. It's not the complete, you know, renouncing of all filth. That's not what it is. It's just asking God to be forgiven and to have a good conscience. And it happens through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So like the ark was raised up above the flood and survived the deluge with its inhabitants. So this baptism raises us up. That's the idea of baptism through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's it for today. It's October 7th, 2023, 1945 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you so much. This is Crow. And on my behalf, Crow and Cassie are saying bye for now.